Hello and welcome to the King's Cast. The theatre, a place of wonder, imagination and excitement. But how do we arrive at that final polished product? Here to talk about this with me further, about the practicalities of the system, are Gav Leonard, Participation Training Manager at the Theatre Royal Wakefield, and Georgina Jackson, Teacher of Drama at the King's School. Welcome to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
So, would you start us off with, I suppose, what many people would assume is one of the first parts of putting on a production? What's the deal with auditions? How does it work? What do you have to do? And what might people expect?
So, dependent on the show, I've been to a range of auditions, and what they usually tend to do for professional performances is you do a dance audition first. In that dance audition, you are called in with a number on your chest or your back, and you will learn a short routine. You then will perform it one after the other, sort of in groups within that space. A little top tip for something like that, I would say, is wear something bright and stand out. Don't stand at the back because you want to be seen. And don't be intimidated by the people around you because you never know if their skills in other forms of theatre are going to be a lot weaker than yours. If you're sort of, you struggle a little bit with the style of dance perhaps, then just keep going and go for it. After that, we usually tend to do a singing audition and then onto an acting audition where they'll usually try and pair you up with somebody that perhaps you would be working with.
And are these sort of full day things, do they tend to happen at the venue where the production will be performed ultimately, or do these happen elsewhere?
So it can be a bit of both, really. It depends on the show, depends on the how many people have gone to the audition. If it's an open casting, it could last over quite a few days. Usually you'd have a recall for sort of the second parts of the audition. They do tend to cut out a lot of people after the dance auditions. But again, it does depend on sort of the number of people needed in the show.
I think Georgina's experience is very much from a musical theatre point of view.
Yeah.
I think with a lot of perhaps television work, you might, your first point of contact might be to send in a self-tape of some script that you've been sent in advance. You may have an opportunity to perform a monologue that you've chosen that you're familiar with, but the most likely scenario in musical theatre is you will be expected to turn up and do the thing they set on the day and to respond very quickly to material rather than having that time in advance to do any preparation.
It sounds really quite intense. You talk about the sort of tightness of the audition time, that idea of being seen and making a first impression. Is it basically about making first impressions rather than getting it absolutely right? Or is the priority, do you reckon, in your experiences, is it more about actually doing as you're told and getting it right rather than stealing the show, I suppose?
I think it's very possible to get work because somebody wants to work with you rather than because you are an exceptional performer. And you can be an exceptional performer that nobody wants to work with. The thing about the theatre industry is it's very small. Everybody who's doing that job has been doing it for a long time, and they know everybody else that does that job. If you turn up to a gig and you're a nightmare to work with, you guarantee everybody on that job, everybody they know, don't work with them, they're awful.
Yeah, it's a really good point to raise, actually, because the way that you sort of hold yourselves in those situations where you might have a little moment of one-to-one with maybe the director, you do have to be really careful sort of how you're putting yourself across, because that is so correct. They want you to be part of their family for a little while. When you're in a cast of a show, they are your family. They are who you see. You eat with them. You sleep next to them. It's terrible if you're touring. It is important that you are showing, I'm actually a really nice person to work with and I'm going to do a really good job.
That's very interesting. I always thought that it was an audition was about showing your skill, and obviously that's a big part of it, but there's a lot more to consider. Can I also ask about, so the auditions obviously are about the people who will be hopefully performing on the stage in the production, but there must be an awful lot more that goes on behind the scenes, in the preparation, in the rehearsal times. Gav, would you mind just taking us through some of the different roles, some of the different people that will be involved in that preparation and rehearsal?
The best example to give would be the planning for our annual pantomime at the theatre, because it's the biggest production we've put. When it's up for 6 weeks. We've got 3-4 weeks of rehearsals. We've got pro cast, amateur cast, musical director, choreographer, our entire technical team. So that process will start with a script. Then have a model box meeting where we see what the set is going to look like. The script will then be rewritten because you realise that the set doesn't say the things that your storytelling does and you have to change things. Because panto, there's a lot of pop music, a lot of musical theatre, so we will have a song meeting with writer, musical director, choreographer and the director. Then the script will get written again. with the theatre's current pantomime cast, we've got a lot of people who are perhaps coming back for the second or third year, which we've not always had. We know that our writer, Chris, is also our Dame, and he has been for the last 12 years, and that's fairly certain that he's number one on the cast list. We may then go down to London and hold some auditions for any roles that we require, or we might audition more locally, or in the event of COVID, we might just get our address books out and go, oh, I know her, and hope that they're available. And then kind of by the summer, about 6 months after the first draft of the script, we will audition our youth chorus. So we normally work with about 80 young people, 3 teams of 6. They all start to do a weekly musical theatre audition. They'll learn the choreography, they'll learn the songs. And then about 2.5-3 months later, start working with the pro cast, when the cast go into full rehearsals. So at a full rehearsal, you're looking at director, musical director, choreographer, cast, your deputy stage manager, who's making any notes in the book about any props, any builds, any sound effects. And then by the time you get into the building, you're starting to add staff, lighting operator, sound operator, follow spot operators, fly operators for any backgrounds coming in and out, stage hands moving any set, and that suddenly kind of goes from a meeting between 4 people to 50 people. Chaperones looking after your young people. And the longer it goes on, the more people are there. And then by opening night, you've got to add another 500 people in the audience.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Can I just ask you something specific there? You mentioned pro cast, amateur cast, youth cast. Now, some of that sounds quite obvious to me, but would you just take me through what the difference is and what are the main differences in how you work with them? And would you just clarify those for me?
So with most of our productions, where we're talking about professional cast, we're talking about an adult performer of an agent who has been to an audition, has been cast and has been paid to be at rehearsals and performances. With our youth chorus, those young people normally work with us under a training umbrella, so it's experience for them rather than paperwork. And they will be restricted to the number of hours that they can work and places to perform, so we'll have all the restrictions that the child licensing authorities will put upon us. Which obviously requires a safeguarding and then having chaperones look after them whilst they're at the theatre and all that well-being. So, yeah, that would be the difference between a pro cast and a young person that we would be working with. There are places, I mean, the tour of Annie, you know, those young people are getting paid. The tour of Oliver, those young people are getting paid. Or Charlie the Chocolate Factory. So we're talking about large-scale West End or touring productions, and obviously young people that are working on those shows will be getting paid.
Georgina, in the productions that you've worked with, what was it like? What was the dynamic, I suppose, between the pro cast and amateur cast?
We never did anything with an amateur cast.
Ooh.
But my acting career was quite short-lived, so when I was there, we were all pro, and then we did a tour. I was Belle in Beauty and the Beast. That was my sort of main touring role, but that was through Disney. So everybody, it was a small cast though. There was about 38 of us all together, so it was a small touring cast.
And that's a small cast. 38 people is a small cast.
Yeah.
Goodness me. Right. On that note, this idea of a career, Georgina, would you talk to us about, it must be exhausting. I mean, it's exhausting watching a musical production. But what's it like to live that day in, day out? How on earth do you sustain your energy, your physicality, your voice in particular, if you're singing as well? So how do you make sure that that's a sustainable part to be in?
So it really is sort of, you have to pick how you're going to live your lifestyle around it. Obviously, doing something like musical theatre, you have to be extraordinarily passionate about it, because you have to keep trying and trying and trying. And you're going to face a lot of failure sometimes, but you've just got to see everything as a lesson. And in that, it's sort of, I did notice towards the end of me living in London, there was quite a lot of my friends that had kind of left really, really quickly after we'd finished university, when they realised that the lifestyle that they maybe chose to live wasn't going to coincide with the lifestyle that they needed to live. Because I was under the impression when I'd finished my training, I finished now, I'm trained now, off I go. And that isn't really how it works. You have to keep going to classes. You have to keep attending acting workshops. You need to make sure you've got that drive. You need to go and keep fit. You need to go to the gym. You need to go, you don't need to, but you should be going to these dance classes. You need to constantly want to improve. And I think that's a really important part of your craft and how you're going to progress in the industry.
So it's quite a commitment then.
It's a big commitment. It's a lifestyle choice.
Going back to the practicalities then of what it's like to be part of this production, we've talked about the auditions, we've gone through some of the background roles and what they bring and how does that work as a process. What's it look like getting closer to the production, closer to opening night? I've heard terms like technical rehearsal, dress rehearsal. What do those things mean, and how is that different to any other rehearsal? So somebody explain that to me, please.
Yeah. So for the period of time where the company are in the rehearsal room, they're not normally in the building or in the space that they're going to be performing in. It's a more informal environment where you can give notes, where you can add something, take something away. It's where you do the choreography. It's where the music director makes sure that the songs are spot on. There will be a member of the technical team in that space making notes. But once you get into the theatre, once you get to the space that you're performing in, the idea is that your performers know that show, and then you add the theatre magic to it. So you need to get microphones right, performers, so you've got your sound operator making all of these notes about if you are particularly loud or if you've got particularly bad mic placements or all of those things that you might need to make notes of. The lighting design is going to come in, is that adding a little bit of colour and shape to things. That'll be the first time that they start working with full-scale bits of scenery as well. So technical team at the stage challenge will start making a track so that they know what goes on where, when it comes off, when it does come off. Because if you leave the carriage on after the end of Cinderella, then it's noticeable. So people that you don't see, they're essential to make sure that the show looks exactly the way that the show should look.
So can I ask, in the technical rehearsal, is it that the technical decisions have already been made and it's just a case of practicing them? Or in the tech rehearsal, is it a case of having the performers on stage while the tech teams make the decisions, play around with it, make changes to the decisions that have been made?
It's a finessing, really. A lot of the instructions for the technical team come through somebody called the deputy stage manager, who is calling your lighting cues, calling your sound cues, calling your flying person to bring in and out bits of scenery, yelling at the stage team because something's been left on stage that shouldn't have been. So you know that at the end of that person saying that thing, "Don't stop me now" starts playing. But the choreographer will have a certain nuance about exactly how starts playing. It's not just a case of right, just press play and everyone is like, no.
I think from a school show perspective, that always happens. It's always, "John, go and get the mop. You left the mop. Get the mop. There cannot be a mop in a scene which is in a church." Like, it's very funny, actually. Get the mop.
But a lot of it comes down to the safety as well. I mean, from the audience point of view, it's a lot of fun, but you have to think about the number of actually quite dangerous things that are happening. Big heavy cloths with metal bars falling out of the sky. When you've got a steam change, that's the reality of what's happening there. And if that fly comes at the wrong time, then somebody stood there, that's a big clog in the head of a metal bar. It's really going to affect you when you're in front of an audience. You've got pyro rigged, an explosion that's nice and fun if nobody stood right directly on top of it, but if they're in the wrong place and they don't know there's pyro there, you see that.
That could go badly.
I think it's a lot of trust, isn't it, within the team and communicating and making sure everybody knows what they should be doing.
Mm. So how is that different? How is the tech rehearsal different to the dress rehearsal?
Well, the dress should be how it should be on the first night, really, essentially. So by that point, all of the scenery issues or lighting cues, everything like that, should be just tried, tested and run really smoothly, so that when you do the dress rehearsal, it's a case of, okay, let's watch the full show, how it should be, what's gone wrong, let's fix it.
Yeah. Tech rehearsals are spectacularly boring, but they're absolutely essential.
And yet they sound the most interesting.
Right, and there's a light band centre, stand in the centre, and you are there for a while.
You can't feel the light on your face, you're not in the light.
Brilliant. Right, let's move on then. We've talked about tech rehearsals and dress rehearsals. It's the final countdown, I suppose, opening night. How does that work? Do you have the director buzzing around giving last minute bits of advice? Is a choreographer and the music directors, are they still there? Or do they step back and let the production run? Who is it that runs the show on the night and makes sure that everyone and everything is doing what they're meant to do and where they're meant to be? How does the actual opening night work? Hopefully, ideally.
I mean, those people are still going to be there on opening night. It will depend on the director or the choreographer as to how quickly you get rid of them once your show's finished and up. Because by the time you're opening, your show should be finished.
In theory.
So really, once the show's up, it's the responsibility of the production manager. Because it's a finished creative product and now it just needs to run as safely and as practically as possible. So things will get broken and things need mending. People get tired. You start thinking about bringing in understudies. You kind of really, your director and your choreographer will be there until they realise that the show's finished.
Yeah, I feel from my perspective, the backstage crew are the unsung heroes of opening nights and things like that, because by then I feel, you know, the choreographer, the director, they've done their job and they're ready to watch and see what they've made. While as those guys are running round backstage, they're making sure that everything is where it should be. They are great and we never see them.
Mm. So, actually, I do want to ask about understudies. You mentioned understudies. How prevalent is the use of understudies? Because when I was in school a long time ago, if you got an understudy part, it really was a kick in the teeth because you're not going to get to perform. You're not going to get to have a go. How prevalent is the use of understudies? Is it really a sort of emergency last minute situation? Or is it like you said, Gav, that especially over something like Panto that runs for a longer period of time, or perhaps a touring production, is that turnover of performers more likely?
I would say that the swing and cover are phrases that get used a lot in musical theatre, where you have a large ensemble of dancers and singers. It might be that they know one of the principal characters' tracks, and if that principal comes down with something, and a member of your ensemble is able to slip in to that part and kind of take over the principal part. So yeah, there's a lot of swings who, if they're on a big West End show, might actually go on twice or three times a month in that part just to keep fresh with them.
Yeah, I think, again, I think it would depend on the show as well, wouldn't it, and the character. When I was starting to lose my voice on, I think we're about a month and a half in, and rather than sort of panicking about losing my voice, we all sort of said, okay, let's put the understudy on, let's have them go, rest the voice and get better and then come back. And I think I felt so glad knowing that that could happen, because my worry was I was going to lose it for a long time and then I'd be out for a while. And obviously you don't want to, you want to perform, you want to do that. So I think it would depend on the circumstances, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, with a touring production or a West End show where they replace the principals on a regular rotation, it might be a case of going, let's get our last they're not on a gig at the moment, let's get them back to cover because they know that part because they did it for 4 months.
Thank you ever so much. I've got a much clearer idea of the massive process it takes to put a production on. So thank you again to Gav Leonard from the Theatre Royal Wakefield and Georgina Jackson, from the King's School. And thank you again for listening. Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you.